You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In 1943, while war was raging in Italy, a small group of dedicated art historians, architects, and artists worked to ensure that the country's great art treasures weren't looted, lost, or destroyed. In The Venus Fixers, Ilaria Dagnini-Bray tells the story of the Allied monuments officers in Italy who shored up bomb-damaged palaces and churches, safeguarded masterpieces by Giotto and Botticelli, and protected the country's cultural heritage from destruction during the war. A paperback edition of her book has just been issued by Picador, and I'm very pleased it has brought her to our show today. Hello.
Thank you very much.
When did the efforts to protect art in Italy during the war first start? Obviously before the Allied soldiers ever arrived.
Absolutely, yes. They started in 1940, as soon as Italy entered war.
So they knew that it was likely that somewhere down the line there would be air raids and
they
heavy
knew
bombing.
That there might be air raids, and most of the protective efforts were aimed at protecting artworks from air raids. And what they did, what the Italian fine arts officials did, was to try and evacuate Italian cities of all their artworks and take these masterpieces to villas, monasteries, castles in the countryside, thinking that being away from the cities that were the targets of air raids, they'd be safe there. This, of course, didn't keep in consideration at the moment, at that time, that there might be a ground war. The fascist government always ruled it out and reassured everybody by saying that this would never happen and that the war would be short and victorious. Whereas it went on for almost 5 years. And in 43, when the Allies did land in Italy and brought ground war, all of these masterpieces that had been taken out in the countryside were suddenly at great risk of being wiped by the battle.
When the war began, were most of the Italian public supportive of Mussolini and Hitler?
The Italian public really didn't support the war that much. And Mussolini did a good job of convincing everybody, but he was a dictator, so he could do pretty much what he wanted.
But the bombing really didn't occur until Italy declared war on the United States?
Yes, the very serious bombings began in 1942. The fall of 1942 is where especially the northern industrial towns, Milan, Turin, Genoa, were really heavily hit by air raids. And the south as well, Naples, was very badly hit.
What was done to protect churches and palaces, which obviously couldn't be moved?
No. They did what they could, and they covered most church facades with sandbags and wooden scaffoldings, which in many cases proved to be actually quite hazardous. I mean, wood could caught fire if hit by bombs, incendiary bombs. So in many cases, it was goodwill on the part of the Italians, but the damage was done extensively.
Some churches were destroyed.
Yes.
Completely.
Yeah.
And some great art, since we're talking about art, because
yes.
Unlike paintings that can be removed from a wall, these were the walls.
These were the walls. And, well, the worst, the greatest tragedy, as far as art is concerned in Italy during World War II, was the destruction of Mantegna's frescoes in the Ovettari Chapel in the Church of the Eremitani in Padua. It took a direct hit in March of 44. And this beautiful, it was Mantegna's first major work, the one that revealed his genius to his contemporaries, was wiped out by the bombs. And in that case, there was nothing they could do except pick up the pieces for future restoration.
Well, we do have photographs of those paintings.
But yes.
It could never be the same.
No, it could never be. In fact, it's an interesting story. The frescoes had been photographed the year before, color photographs, but the quality turned out not to be very good. So when eventually, some 15 years ago, a group of scientists decided to virtually restore the frescoes, they used the Alinari photographs from the beginning of 1900, black and white, but of much better quality than the later ones in color.
I'm assuming that when they moved all of these things, they kept good records of where they were bringing them.
Oh, they were absolutely meticulous because In World War One, this had lists had not been kept, and at the end of the war, there was a lot of stuff that went missing. So all every single piece of work of art, painting, statue, books, art, everything was meticulously cataloged, and that helped enormously in the retrieving operations towards the end of the war.
Well, there still were limited funds. Were there people who were upset that so much money was being spent on protecting art when the Italian people were vulnerable?
Yes, that was always a concern. It was a concern in the Allied armies too. That there should be a unit like this. There should the Stars and Stripes, which was the Allied armies newspaper, published a letter where a colonel was complaining about devoting work and resources to this instead of thinking of people. But it was a very small unit, and with limited resources, they did a lot of great work.
What about the generals? Did they think that this was a good allocation of funds and personnel?
They thought it was a good idea. Eisenhower sent a letter to his commander saying, military necessity has to be respected, but let's not confuse it with military convenience. And in other words, in many cases, of course, if there's a choice between a monument and even one human life, the human life comes first. But in many cases, it's not as black and white as that, and one can be saved as well as the others, which was the attitude of these officers. You could do good work without taking away resources from the war effort.
My guess is Ilaria Danini Brey, B-R-E-Y, her book, The Venus Fixers. Where did the name The Venus Fixers come from?
Well, this was a nickname that these officers were given. We don't know who exactly invented it.
But it sounds like a slightly pejorative.
It's a pejorative, yes. It is, whereas everybody else was fighting with arms and these were concerned with statues and their protection. So, yes, it was pejorative.
Well, when they started going looking for great works of art to protect, what was the response of the Italians? Hadn't they been warned that Americans were barbarians?
Yes, the fascist and the Nazi propaganda had been pretty exhaustive and convincing that the Americans especially, but the Allied armies in general, were barbarians. But in fact, when the Italian fine arts officials, they call soprintendenti in Italian, superintendent is somewhat of an awkward translation in English, but when these people realized that the Allied armies had officers with them who were there to help, were elated. Also at that point in 1943, Italy had been at war for 3 years and the resources were really completely depleted. So to have some officers who helped them secure materials for restoration, transportation, fuel, was manna, really, for them, and helped them enormously.
You mentioned that Naples was particularly hard hit. It's a major port, and it's
yes.
also in the south. And,
yes.
And the move was up from the south.
Absolutely.
As I understand it, soldiers were using the National Archaeological Museum as barracks.
That was one of the harshest and battles that they had that these monuments officers had to fight, and unfortunately, it wasn't one that they won, at least not initially, because Naples was in such the destruction was so extensive in Naples. I think 2/3 of the city were down. So there was this palace, enormous palace, intact and far away from the port, so far away from the danger of air raids. So the British army wanted to secure it. And, of course, it's the seat of one of the best archaeological collections with all the masterpieces from Pompeii and Herculaneum. So eventually they managed to get the officers out of the museum. But for months it was a pharmaceutical deposit.
Did this effort start from this begin as the invasion began? Does it begin
before.
In Sicily and then at the tip of the boot and work its way up?
Yes, yes. Well, the efforts to put together this group of men had started in the United States. And it was promoted by the director of the Metropolitan Museum, Francis Henry Taylor, the director of the National Gallery in Washington, David Finley, who managed to convince the American government that it was necessary to have this kind of unit. And then they sent initially two men in Sicily, and then the group grew as the armies went up the peninsula.
Well, how do you develop a strategy, a war strategy, when you're worried that if you drop any bombs on Tuscany, you're likely to hit the Leaning Tower of Pisa, the Uffizi Museum, the Maestà in Siena, and some of those small towns that are thousands of years old.
Yeah, well, that's why General Clark at some point said in a moment of frustration that fighting in Italy was like bringing war to a goddamn museum, because wherever you touch, there's a work of art. What they did was to prepare maps, special maps of Italian towns, big towns as well as villages, where the monuments were highlighted. And these were distributed widely in the army. So ideally, they should plan, commanders and bombing crews should plan their operations, keeping in mind that these sites were not to be touched.
Although some sites were not spared. In Florence, the Ponte Vecchio was spared, but the Ponte Santa Trinita was destroyed.
That was the Germans' mines. Yes, the retreating German army decided to mine all the bridges of Florence, except for the Ponte Vecchio. Presumably because Hitler thought that the Ponte Vecchio was picturesque and didn't want to have it destroyed, although the Ponte Santa Trinita, you could make an argument that the Santa Trinita
was also old.
Old and very, very beautiful.
And he wanted Paris burned down.
And so that was the destruction of the bridges in Florence is one of the great tragedies, because it was meant to slow the Allies, but it really didn't. It just...
Well, we were talking about preventing looting and the like, but the German army did a fair amount of looting itself, didn't it?
Yes, they did. They took advantage of the fierce battle around Florence that went on for weeks, and they knew that there was a lot of art, as I said before, hidden castles and villas outside. And these castles,
had the Uffizi been cleaned out totally?
Oh, yeah. There was nothing on the walls at the Uffizi. Everything was outside. And some German officers actually managed to get hold of 560 masterpieces, which they took, saying that they were salvaging them from the battlefield, but in fact they brought them behind enemy lines. And nobody knew about their fate for months, and in fact until the German surrender in May of 45.
So they were returned.
They were found in South Tyrol. It's a very complicated story. They were taken to South Tyrol with the intention of eventually bringing them to Germany. General Karl Wolff, who was the head of the SS in Italy, having convinced himself that Germany was losing the war, he started secret negotiations with the Allied armies, and he used the Florentine artworks as a sort of guarantee of his good intentions. And on the eve of the surrender, he revealed their whereabouts, and so they were found. They were still in Italy, in Italian territory.
One of the first works to return to Florence was the sculpture of Cosimo the First.
Yes, yes. Beloved statue.
Was that
yes.
A significant statue for the Florentine
Well,
people?
He's called the father of the Padre della Patria. His father. He was the first Grand Duke of the Medici. And it's a beautiful statue that sits in Piazza della Signoria very prominently. Yes, his return, he had been taken out to the Villa Poggio Caiano, which is a Medici villa outside Florence, due west of Florence. And the return of Cosimo was good for the morale of the Florentines. It also signaled that air raids had stopped, and so it was safe to bring back a work of art.
The success of this, you would have thought, would have been a lesson for the U.S. military, but then after the invasion of Baghdad, there was widespread damage and looting of the museums and libraries.
That's the saddest thing. This is such a great chapter in the history of World War II. Really, it's a good story, but it's remained completely isolated. It wasn't taken as an example, unfortunately. And as these officers proved, it didn't take many men. It was just a limited effort that could have saved the Museum of Baghdad from that horrible looting.
And nowadays, pollution seems to be destroying a lot of Italy's heritage. There was an article in the Times the other day about How Rome is, ancient Rome is falling apart.
Yeah. Well, I was recently in Italy for the publication of the Italian edition of my book, and some person in the Uffizi said to me, "Yeah, I could use a couple of Venus fixes because we have these problems with pollution, which is very serious and unfortunately not so easy to solve."
Thank you so much for being with us,
thank
Ilaria
you very much.
Danini Bray. Her book, The Venus Fixers, now available in paperback from Picador. A wonderful story, a story that we should be proud of, but we haven't known much about until you wrote this book.
Thank you so much.
An otherwise pleasant weekend hike can be ruined by a brush with poison ivy. Up next on this week's Please Explain, Dr. Michael J. Ballack and Dr. Lewis S. Nelson describe what makes certain plants like poison ivy and poison oak so irritating to human skin. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.